Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. You are listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Mat-Su Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our streaming site, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for Mushing Radio as well as iTunes. You can find all of our episodes there. Today we're going to continue with our Iditarod Musher series. We've been talking to these folks ever since the race has concluded, I guess a couple of weeks ago now, and today we're talking to Rick Casillo. He came in an impressive 44th place this year, just over 12 days. He got his start mushing in 2002, running his first Iditarod in 2004, calling in from Big Lake, Alaska. Rick, how's it going?
Excellent, Robert. How are you doing?
I am well, thank you. Could you introduce yourself a little bit, tell us who you are and what you're all about?
Yeah, name is Rick Casillo. We run dogs out of Big Lake here, is where the kennel is at. Name of my kennel is Battle Dogs Racing. And like you said, first Iditarod was back in 2004. We've done six of them now, and we're definitely gonna keep this mission going. So we plan on sticking around for a few more years. We took a little bit of a break after 2008 and decided to come back. Back in 2014.
I'm definitely interested in hearing about your campaign that you talk about on the trail and one of the main reasons why you're out there doing what you do. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about this year's Iditarod. As I mentioned, 44th place, just over 12 days. How did you perceive the trail this year? How did you deal with those extreme conditions there near Huslia and there on the river? And any memorable experiences that really stand out this year compared to last?
I'd be lying to say if I was happy with 44th. It was just one of those years, you know. Unfortunately, we were driving one of the best dog teams that I've driven, and we had the most miles. We had 3,000 miles on this team. It was just very unfortunate for us. The dogs caught a virus early, and actually on the first day they caught a virus, and some of the dogs had that bug all the way until we got to Nome. So we kind of had to revamp the strategy, get the dogs back on track. That's why we 24'd so early. We 24'd in Tanana, actually, and that definitely was not part of the game plan, but I did what I thought was best for the dogs. And then I actually ended up getting pneumonia during the race, about halfway through the race. So not only were the dogs sick, I was sick too. So we were battling some things out there. The race itself, the trail, I thought was, really good from start to finish. There's nothing, I mean, my very first run to Nenana, the trail by the time we went across was really punchy, and that definitely had an effect on our dogs later on in the race with, dealing with triceps and wrist and things like that. But, for me, I thought last year was definitely more challenging physically. This year was kind of a mental thing with us just because, dealing with sick dogs and then dealing with myself being sick. But it was brutally cold, and that was the biggest extreme for us was that extreme temperatures. We camped out actually on the way to Huslia, and Musher went by and said, "Rick, do you realize how cold it is?" And I said, "It's got to be at least 50." And it was actually Christy Barrington, and she said, "No, it's my thermometer goes down to 60, and it's bottomed out right now." So that was definitely the coldest I've ever run dogs in. It wasn't a scary situation, but it's definitely one that made you aware, at those temperatures, you don't make mistakes.
Right. So for our more novice listeners that may not know about a lot of long distance mushing, how do you care for a team that is dealing with a pretty decent bug out there? Then of course, how do you care for yourself? Most people think, wow, I'm sick, I'm going to, curl up in bed, grab some chicken soup and ride this thing out. How did you deal with both of those issues, the dogs and yourself out there?
Well, first with the dogs, you know, I literally had to, and I told people we had to spoon feed them, and that's almost to the point of what we were doing, just because my dog team usually eats like a bunch of wolves. Eating is not something I worry about with this team. However, this year, you know, they just weren't excited about eating. They really didn't stand up and look interested in eating till about day 6 or 7 on this race. So we had to be very particular. Each dog, they wanted something different. Some dogs wanted fish, some dogs wanted beef. You know, some dogs just only eat dry kibble. I literally had 2 dogs that ran this whole race on dry dog food only. If I offered them meat, they would just turn their noses up. So you have to pay very close attention to what your dogs are wanting and what they're needing. We didn't sleep at all on our 24-hour layover. Really, we didn't sleep at all for the first 5 days just because I was having to pay so much attention to these dogs, and I literally would have to wait out by the dog team and, you know, wait for one to get up or move or kind of look my way, and I would run over there with some food and literally hand-feed the dogs. So we really had to, you know, pay close attention to what their needs were. Our runs in between checkpoints, you know, I was happy with the way the dogs were moving. It's just once they shut down, you know, it just seemed that they would much rather sleep than do anything else. We never had a problem leaving checkpoints or anything like that. Our times were very good. I was happy with that. But we just had to pay really close attention to what the dogs' needs were. And, you know, I'm a big proponent on ego. You cannot run this race on your ego. If you do that, you're going to go home early. You have to focus on your dogs and your dogs only. And, you know, and that's what we did this year. I completely, basically threw what, you know, we kind of write schedules and things like that before the race and what we try to do. But ultimately, your dogs are going to tell you what you want to do. And that's kind of how I've always run and trained dogs, is we do what's best for the dogs. You know, for myself, I spent 32 hours in Shaktulik. That was my worst point of my sickness, is when I was in Shaktulik. I went down to the health clinic there in Shaktulik and kind of checked myself in. I wanted to get looked at. And we literally blacked out on the table there, the doctor's table there. They had to kind of wake me up, and, you know, they advised me to scratch immediately, get flown to Nome for chest x-rays. And I kind of looked up at the girl and said, well, it's not going to be an option. I'm not going to scratch. I'll sit here for 4 days if I have to, but we have to finish, just because the mission that we're on. And I had, you know, 2 warriors waiting for me in Nome, and, you know, we were finishing this race, not only for them, but for all our warriors that we work with.
So for our listeners, how far is Shaktulik from the finish?
Almost 300 miles. We still have another 2.5 days left in the race from there.
So you pulled in, as we mentioned, right after 12 days, 30-some-odd minutes there. How were you feeling when you pulled into Nome? Was everything rocking and rolling by then, or were you guys still battling the bug, so to speak?
No, we were absolutely still battling the bug. No, it was yesterday and today is the best I've felt since the race. All the fluid is just about out of my lungs right now, but for the week after the race, we were still hacking and coughing pretty good. Physically, I feel okay. It's just, you know, you're really tired. You take lots of little power naps throughout the day. You know, so the strength is back. It's, you know, kind of that mental fatigue right now, kind of like if you worked on a computer all day and read a book all day, you kind of have that mental fatigue, and that's kind of what we're dealing with right now.
Right. So let's jump into why you do what you do. Of course, I'm sure you love mushing. You run a expedition company up on one of the glaciers in the off season, and you do something pretty unique out there for our warriors. Can you tell us about that, please?
Sure. 3 years ago, we kind of started Battle Dogs Racing, and when I took a break from my Iditarod, you know, I needed to take that break. And when I came back, I, you you know, I told myself I'm going to do something with this platform. At Battle Dogs Racing, I actually wrote this concept up about, almost 8 years ago. And working with veterans has always been a passion of mine. It's something that I've always wanted to do. And so when I decided to come back to Race Iditarod, I said, you know what, we're gonna marry these two ideas together and raise awareness. And our big thing is what we do is we work with veterans that are dealing with PTSD and TBIs, traumatic brain injuries. So that's kind of our main focus. We won't turn away any veteran, but that's really our main focus, and also the high rate of suicide in our veteran community. A lot of people do not know that every day 22 veterans decide to end their own life, and that's a tragic number. That's a horrific number. That's something that we need to work on, and that's kind of our big campaign this year that we launched was the Stop 22 campaign. And so that's really the main focus. You know, this mission that we started 3 years ago, it's changed my life absolutely 100%. This is my calling. We're getting a really good response in our veteran community to the warriors that come through our program. And, you know, this is just something, you know, if you will, a new motivation for me and really helps add another focus to our kennel. You know, that's why I really don't race under my name. That's why we kind of renamed the kennel to Battle Dogs Racing is to represent and honor our warriors.
And your wife is deployed now or was recently deployed. Is that right?
No, she is. Yes. She's currently deployed as we speak right now. Yes. She left in January and she'll be back sometime in June.
Right.
And this is her third deployment. So this hits home with us. You know, this isn't just something out of a whim or that we thought of. You know, this definitely hits home with me with my wife being a veteran. Like I said, this is her third deployment. This really hits home for us.
So in the off season and during the racing season, you get these guys involved. They come up and spend some time on the runners up on the glaciers. And then in the off season, in your off season at work and your mushing season, you get some of these guys involved with the logistics and all that goes on during Iditarod. Can you tell us about both of those, please?
Sure. Well, with the summer, you know, having where we have our camp at, you know, it's one of the most beautiful places on earth. And it was an obvious choice that we were going to bring warriors up there to kind of spend the day up there with us and learn about dog mushing, take in the sights and sounds of the glacier. You know, the only way they up there is by helicopter. So it's a beautiful flight seeing trip for the guys as well. And last year we started what we call our Warrior Week, where we bring warriors up to the glacier, we bring them up there for a night or two, and then we come back down. And one of my passions is fly fishing, so then I will take them down to the Kenai River, and we'll take them fly fishing for a few days, and then we also will do some whitewater rafting. So it's not just only mushing; it's really our thing is anything outside, and it's outdoor rehabilitation. So we do that during the summertime. And we'll also, you know, bring the guys out to the kennel during the summer if that's what they want to do. And then during the winter, we kind of transition over to, you know, preparing for Iditarod. We get them involved with, you know, helping cut meat for food drops, bagging booties up, and like you said, the logistics, anything that's involved. The main thing with these guys is they want to help and they want to work. They need a mission. And it's very easy to assign a bunch of tasks and they tackle it head on and they love it. These guys, they don't want to be coddled or held or anything like that. Don't show them any special treatment. Just give them a mission and it gets done. It really gets done. It's rewarding for both them and us.
I want to talk a little bit about the guys that you had there in Nome, but before we do that, the guys that come up, are they primarily from Alaska or are you getting guys from all over the country that come up?
All over the country. The two warriors that we brought up this year, one was from Wisconsin, the other one was from Missouri, and they came up and they spent 2.5 weeks up here. We held a benefit in November, and all the money raised for that benefit went directly to our warrior program. you know, airline tickets, food, a little bit of spending money, their time in Nome. So that benefit was a great help for that. And, yeah, they came up, helped out tremendously, you know, getting the dogs ready, scooping in the yard, taking care of the dogs that were left behind, and got to take in the sights and sounds of Nome for the finish. And after I finished, they were a great help. They were able to take care of the dogs when I was able to just go up to the hotel room and crash out for a few hours. So it was a big relief having those guys there.
So what are these young guys, these young soldiers that come from, you know, down south, Georgia, Mississippi, South Carolina, North Carolina, that's never been around snow and definitely hasn't been around sled dogs, what do they think about this whole deal? What is their opinion of it? And what do they leave with after they're done with their week or if they've helped you out during the wintertime?
Well, you know, when I first started this, you know, me being a civilian, I never served. This is just something I'm passionate about. This is my way of serving and giving back is doing this Battle Dogs program. You know, so at first we started 3 years ago, I wasn't sure how they were going to take it or take me. Generally, these warriors really don't open up to civilians. They'll open up to their battle buddies and veterans that they served with. But once they heard my story and kind of what I do, just like the guy, you know, you mentioned Georgia. So a guy from Georgia, you know, they cannot fathom standing on the back of a dog sled at 40 below zero for 10, 12 days. Just like, and by no means am I trying to compare, you know, going to war compared to Iditarod, but I can't fathom the idea of hearing that snap of that bullet go over your head. So
right.
I think that's where it started at first for us was, you know, I can't fathom what they're doing. I respect the hell out of what they're doing. And just like they can't understand what would drive a guy to stand on the back of a sled at 40 below zero. So that's where it starts. So we have two different stories, and that's where the dialogue and the questions start getting engaged. And then they start to open up. That's where the trust will start. And then they feel a little bit more comfortable with you, and that's when they start to open up and they'll share their stories with me.
Right. Such an awesome campaign, Rick. I commend you for everything you do. I've followed along with this for quite a while over the last couple of years. You know, I see your guys' trucks driving around town all the time with the Stop 22 logo on there. And of course, there's quite a bit of press going on during Iditarod time about this. So I know you're out there on the trail doing what you do. How do you think the awareness is getting across? Do you think it's making a difference? Do you think people are learning about this? Maybe not the soldiers themselves, but just the civilians and the impact that that war is taking on our soldiers. And, you know, they're out there giving their lives up for us so we can do what we do. Do you think your campaign is making a difference?
This year, yes. To answer your question, yes. I could not believe the response that we received this year. From the ceremonial start up until what I pulled in Nome, it was. I'm still completely blown away by the exposure that we've gotten and the awareness that we have raised. It's been absolutely awesome, and I think we're ready to go to the next level, the next step with this program. And that's the main thing. You know, the average person does not realize what these guys are battling. They don't know. You know, that's kind of why I made that logo, the Stop 22 logo, the 22 with the line through it, so simple. And, you know, people said, oh, maybe you should have done it this way. And I said, no, we're going to do it this way because it's going to get people to engage. And I cannot tell you how many people have come up to me and said, you know, what the heck is that 22 all about? And then when I hit them with that statistic, they stop dead in their tracks and they look at me and they're like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, no, every day 22 veterans commit suicide.
That's an amazing statistic there. I had no idea until I read more about this that there were that many. I grew up in a military home. My dad never went to war, but, you know, I know what these guys, you know, how tough it is. And, man, that's a tough statistic to take in.
No, it's insane. You know, when you include both wars, you got 2.7 million veterans in our country today, and 20% of those veterans are suffering from PTSD or a traumatic brain injury. You know, you're talking over 500,000 guys and gals that are dealing with this, and it's very unfortunate. But you know, this, I don't call this a job, but unfortunately, I have very good job security. You know, this is something I'll be working on the rest of my life. You know, this is, like I said, it's a passion, it's a mission of mine. And this is something we're going to continue to work on and hopefully change and save as many lives as we can in the process.
So you had mentioned something that was coming up next. What are your plans, if you care to mention those? And then what's happening next year with the dogs? Are you planning on running Iditarod again, taking a break? What's happening?
No, we're absolutely going to run Iditarod next year. You know, like to get back out or get out to the Cusco. I've yet to race that race. So, Iditarod will be the focus. Toying with the idea of maybe doing both, but that's going to be a couple of years out. But no, Iditarod will be the focus. You know, our goal, our goal for me anyways and my wife is we want to build a 12-month camp. We want to have a year-round camp that a lot of the local veterans here that could come out and utilize, even if they just want to come up and spend the night in the cabin and hang out with the dogs or go ice fishing or snow machining. I want to be able to have that for these guys to then make it accessible for these guys to come out. Because the main thing is, you know, they tend to just kind of sit around and not do anything. So we want to make these programs a little bit more accessible for these warriors.
Right.
So
well, I definitely want to commend you again, Rick, on what you're doing out there. And I sure hope that all goes well with your wife and you guys are back together soon. How is she doing over there? Where is she at? And what is her... what's her job over there? I imagine that's tough on you, you know, holding down the fort at home with the dogs and everything else when she's over there doing her thing.
Yeah, no, she's having a good time, I guess. But she enjoys. She believes in her mission. You know, she works with the search and rescue unit here, and she's in the Air Guard. And so that's a big passion of hers is the search and rescue. And she's currently in Djibouti, Africa at the moment right now. It's still part of Operation Enduring Freedom. You know, last time when we first met, we started dating, she deployed to Afghanistan, you know, and it's a little different. These phone calls are a lot nicer now than when we first started getting together. You know, every time I would talk to her when she was in Afghanistan, it was every night, every day they were getting shelled with mortars and things like that. So that's a good thing about this tour here is that we're not hearing that she's getting mortared every single night. But no, it's been tough. You know, obviously she's the rock here in this kennel and keeps me on a straight path. Us mushers tend to weave quite a bit. And we lose focus on the outside world. We're so focused on our dogs and training. So she definitely helps keep me in line.
Well, you know, you had mentioned your dogs. I always like to ask everybody on the show about their dogs. Where are your dogs from primarily? Maybe tell us a quick story about one or two that kind of hold that spot with you. And you know, the fans love to hear about the dogs themselves.
Well, primarily... our line, we kind of got a mixed bag. You know, once I took a break from racing, we completely sold out because I just I needed to take a serious break from it back in 2009. So we're kind of in a rebuilding phase. The majority of the dogs, I would say, the new kennel is based off CV lines. I do have some John Baker stuff in there, a couple Baker dogs in there. A couple Jeff King dogs, but this would be older style breedings. But the two standouts right now in the kennel are actually two dogs that I picked up from Jake Berkowitz, dogs named Hugo and Duster. And after this year, those two each have 11 1,000-mile races, finishes. They've never been dropped from a race. Absolutely incredible dogs. They're just foolproof. You put them in the team and you forget they're there. They're kind of an invisible type dogs.
That's awesome.
That's the process. And, you know, back when in the height of my kennel, you know, the height of my kennel, we had 67 dogs, and everything was based off of CV lines. So we're kind of getting back in that direction. I was very happy with those lines, and I think it's pretty obvious that that name has been pretty successful here the last few years in the race. So we're going to get back to what we used to were driving and hopefully start climbing up.
Real quickly, Rick, we have just a few minutes left. How do your dogs transfer from, you know, the daily grind on the glacier and what you guys are doing up there? I would imagine they're relatively short trips compared to those 30, 40, 50-mile runs in the fall and the winter getting ready for Iditarod. How do they make that switch, or is it pretty seamless for them?
It's pretty seamless. You know, they get so used to it, you know. A good Iditarod trainer is going to throw every different type of situation at these dogs. I think the glacier is a huge benefit. You know, we're able to keep our dogs moving all summer long on snow where they want to be. And, you know, I kind of tell people, we get that question a lot during the summer. It's kind of their summer weightlifting program. And it's really good for young dogs because it teaches them a really good hard work ethic. You really can't slack off up there because the snow is usually deeper and softer. So the dogs really learn how to work up on the glacier. And they also learn because there's a lot of stops during the tours and things like that. So they learn real quick that, hey, just because we're stopped, we don't need to be keep slamming and barking and screaming to go all the time. This is time to rest. So it teaches them how to rest and camp, if you will, a little bit. And then once we get off the glacier, accelerates your fall four-wheeler training program that much faster. You know, most people, their dogs are sitting all summer, they're starting off with, you know, 2-3 mile runs. We're able to start off at 7 to 12 mile runs right off the bat because the dogs are in such good shape.
Right. Good stuff, Rick. Rick Casillo is our guest today here on Mushing Radio. Rick, tell us your website, how folks can get in touch with you and find out more about what you do and the campaign that you have going on right now with the soldiers.
Sure. So the name of the kennel is Battle Dogs Racing, and dogs is spelled D-A-W-G-S. So you can find us on Facebook that way. Then also we do have a website, and that's battledogsracing.com. And that kind of will take you through. We got a bunch of pictures and videos and things like that. And that'll show you where our warriors get to go and what they do and kind of what we're all about. But no, Robert, I want to thank you for giving me a call and wanting to do this interview and helping us get the word out there. So I really appreciate you getting in contact with me.
Hey, no problem, Rick. Like I said, I so much commend what you're doing, and I wish you the best. And maybe one of these days we'll see each other on the trail. How's that?
Absolutely.
All right. Rick Casillo calling in today. We thank him for his time. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.